Welcome to Veterinary Advice Animal News and Views, the place for pets and the people who love them.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Here are your hosts, practicing veterinarians Dr. Roger Welton and Dr. Karen Lewis.
Hello, pet lovers, and welcome to another wonderful episode of Veterinary Advice, Animal News and Views. I'm Dr. Karen Lewis, practicing veterinarian with my friend and co-host, the jet-lagged Dr. Roger Walton.
I am jet-lagged. My apologies ahead of time. I hope I'm not going to be lame tonight, but it's amazing how that lingers with you. I just got it from California on a conference, and I just... You know, have you ever been jet lagged? Well, yeah, you're like a world traveler, so.
Oh, God, the flight to Italy. It was like 4 days before we like felt human. It was horrible.
Yeah, so that's worse. I'm only 3 hours. I'm on California time.
You're kind of a lightweight dude, no offense.
But... Oh, yeah, no, total lightweight. I think I've done it. I've done Europe, but I was in my 20s then, and that didn't matter.
I know, it's crazy. Anyway, yeah. When I did that in my 30s, it was like, nothing. Now in my 40s, I'm like, I cannot do that all night thing.
Oh, my God. Like, I need a 72-hour adjustment period before I even leave the hotel. anyway, one of the cool things, I was just in La Jolla, California, and right in front of our hotel was a whole beach full of seals and sea lions. So that was pretty awesome. I will say that they're really interesting, awesome, beautiful creatures. But they don't smell very good. You ever been up close to seals?
Sea lions? Yeah, there's a very, what's the word? Oceany, briny type.
Yeah, I think it's mostly their poop that stinks, and they kind of roll in it. And it's kind of nasty poop. Like, it's got no, like, form to it. It's kind of a mix of, like, what poop should smell like with fish spiked in it. And,
yeah.
Well,
so
very nasty. Hey, but I learned some of the big, you know, anatomical differences between seals and sea lions, and they were right there just hanging out, you know, mixed amongst each other. Anyway, that was pretty neat. But one of the things that was actually discussed in my conference was we had a talk from Merck, and Merck is a manufacturer, or one of the manufacturers of the two strain influenza vaccine, and I just thought it'd be really interesting to talk about, you know, what really are the merits of vaccinating for this when your area may not be or may no longer be in the midst of an outbreak? You've been through an outbreak in your area. I've recently been through an outbreak in my area, although mine was child's play compared to what you guys went through.
Oh, and ours was in Chicago, like down by St. Louis. We haven't had it at all.
Didn't hit at all.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, Chicago got pretty bad.
Oh, Chicago got clobbered. And sure. Yeah, because my friends who practice in Chicago, it was bad, bad, bad. So, yeah. And the thing is, the media takes dog flu or canine influenza. And I love how they forget the definition of the word epidemic, and they just throw it around, and they're like, there's an epidemic. And then you read the article, and there's like 7 diagnosed dogs, you know, and you're like, not an epidemic, no. and I guess, you know, instilling panic is what gets clicks. So, and people, you know, it's all about getting the click and getting the ad money. I don't know. But anyway, so we're going to talk about dog flu and what the vaccines do. And personally, when I vaccinate for dog flu, I do it simply, basically, for the paper trail. If I have a client who wants to go to a doggy daycare or a boarding kennel and they require it, then I play nice. Some require one strain. Some don't care what strain, just give any flu, which shows they really have no clue what they're, you know what I mean? The fact that they're like, any flu, just whatever. And then some require the bivalent, which is the both strains that we call the old and the new. So I actually remember Dr. Roger back. Oh my gosh. I think I had just graduated vet school, so it was 2004, and there was the first known cases of dog flu was the greyhounds in Pennsylvania. Do you remember that?
Sure, of course.
I was in New Jersey, so Pennsylvania's right there, and there was this, dog flu, what are we going to do? And then it just kind of, a vaccine might have been made then, I don't even know. It just kind of petered out, and we all forgot about it until the Chicago outbreak, pretty much.
Yeah, well, actually, so there was an outbreak here in Florida in about 2007.
Interesting. Okay.
So, and I believe it was the same strain as the one that you dealt with, which was interesting. And it was all greyhounds as well.
Yeah.
So definitely that was, I had legit sick dogs. I think the vaccine for that one like came out too late or something. I really don't recall, but I remember a lot of sick greyhounds. And we have a greyhound track right here in Melbourne, so that hit us particularly good. But the latest, so let me just refresh my strainage. I got the screen pulled up here. So the one that hit the Midwest was H2N8.
H3N8.
I'm sorry, H3N8, my bad. And the, so actually, so let me, okay, yes, H3N8, and in 2017 it was H3N2.
Right, so H3N8 was kind of the old, that would be the dog flu classic, if you will.
Right.
And yeah. It was the residual, and that was the one when I started working at the Humane Society in 2013. There was rumblings about dog flu, and there was this vaccine, and we were going to give it, and that was all H3N8. And at the time, no one really called it H3N8 because there was only one strain out there, so we didn't specify the strain. You know what I mean? Because
it was just
flu shot, right? And it wasn't until the Chicago outbreak that they realized this is different, and that's when they got the strain figured out and realized it was H3N2, which is flu in dogs, flu in people, you know, influenza, where the virus is always mutating and changing. So like we were talking before the show, Dr. Roger, the next outbreak probably won't be either of those. And it'll probably be apparently it likes to be the H3, maybe H3N7. Who knows? No.
Yeah, no, that's exactly correct. And that's the thing is that, so I understand why the kennels and the boarding facilities are requiring it, because it's all just, you know, CYA, cover your ASS, you know, and they can at least show they're doing their due diligence in case there's an outbreak, and people can't point to them and say they've done anything unethical.
Right.
But so like you, I'm really, you know, so I legit did a vaccination protocol because it did arrive here in Florida, Central Florida specifically, Orlando, there was several verified cases. So I'm just a, you know, straight shot down from Orlando. That's our airport hub. So for me, yeah, I'm gonna institute a protocol. And the challenging things about these vaccines though is that it's killed vaccine. So it requires an initial vaccine, then a booster, and then within 10 to 14 days after the booster, then you have full
protection.
Protection, whatever. And full protection is still only about, 65%. So, you know, it's not like it's a phenomenally protective vaccine anyway. I guess supposedly it reduces the morbidity, even if they do still get it. But whatever the case, you know, you got a good month before that sucker's even working. So you have this lag period. So, you know, Florida Veterinary Medical Association put out the statements, University of Florida collaborated and verified, and pretty much statewide we started vaccinating. But here's the thing, we discussed this as well. I had leftovers of that original H3N8 vaccine, but I didn't have anything for the new strain because they had not yet put that out. And of course, emergency manufacture of it came out immediately, but there was people still vaccinating with the old strain just to do something, mm-hmm. even though it was pretty well known that there was no cross protection whatsoever.
Although they like to say there was, and they use the word may. There may be cross protection. Yeah. I'm like, well, yeah, it's like there may be gas in your tank. You know, you kind of want to know.
It's very vague language, you know, but if you look at the human side, when you have these novel strains such as this year, there really is no cross protection. From a realistic standpoint. So I just waited till the two strain came out, and, you know, so that's what I got. And honestly, once the cases started to fizzle out and a good month went by and I didn't hear about any more and none additionally were reported, I pretty much stopped the program. Yet I still have to carry the vaccine because for the reasons that you probably are still giving it as well, for what you call the paper trail.
Yeah, because I tell people that because people call me like, oh my gosh, you know, I heard about the dog flu. Does he need it? And I'm like, no. Well, and we haven't had any dog flu around here. I think we had like 2 confirmed cases on the other side of the river in Missouri. So I'm like, guys, it's a stupid shot. I mean, I get why the boarding kennels require it, because if there were to be an outbreak and they didn't require it, it would be their butt, you know, and I, which it shouldn't be, but we live in this stupid legalistic society where everybody has to sue everybody over something. Right. So, but, and I get it, but I do have some really, sometimes really old, ancient, crotchety dogs, and I just hate to throw unnecessary vaccines at them. I've made them influenza exempt, where I just write a vet letter and I'm like, guys, this dog doesn't need any unnecessary shots. Sorry. And if flu was ever in our area, I would probably change my mind and make less dogs exempt. But I kind of pull the doctor card on this one, which I never do. But I'm like, sorry, this dog is medically exempt from influenza. Board him anyway. Tough. So
you do that. Well, I'll just say stay in my kennel. I don't require it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, my house. I have actually a standalone kennel. It's attached via breezeway with 2 doors, but you know, it's its own building basically with its own ventilation system, unattached to the hospital. So a lot of people choose to board there anyway. But I'm just like, just don't worry about them. Keep them in our kennel here. Is usually my answer, unless we're full. And then I will, you know, I'll try the medically exempt, but I honestly don't know if I've been successful. I mean, there's only been a few, because usually we don't book up with the kennel. But so there's a flip side to that argument, right? The flip side is, you know, when we look at the human side of influenza, when you see the mortality rates, they're the highest among the very old or the very young. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are some that would opine, well, you know, it's these decrepit, crotchety old dogs that are going to be most susceptible. And all things aside, like, you know, living with cancer or having autoimmune disease, what is the harm in protecting these dogs when the flip side of this is they might have a much higher mortality rate if they were to get the disease? By the way, I'm not saying this is my opinion. I'm saying this is what you'll hear from, you know, a lot of vets and certainly the vaccine manufacturer reps.
Well, and I actually, when I did flu vaccinate the older dogs, I made sure I got the H3N2, because back when it was kind of the new strain, the new hot one, and I couldn't, you could hardly get it. The few H3N2s I had, I used on the old dogs for that exact same reason, because if they would by some freak chance get it, you're going to be the one to have complications, you know, yeah. So I'm going to give you that one. But if I couldn't get the H3N2, I'm not going to give them an H3N8. An old one, which isn't going to, you know, I'm like, that's silly. So I was like, no, that's silly. But we had a point before, too, about how, I mean, vaccinating is effective. Flu is kind of its own thing, though. But if you look at it, like, why don't we have polio? Because of vaccination, you know, because you vaccinate everyone and we had what we called herd health. But that works for diseases like polio and smallpox. But with influenza, why do we have influenza? Well, I mean, people have it and we get flu shots. It's just because it's always changing. It's always morphing. We're always kind of reacting to the virus instead of – they try to anticipate the virus, but we never really do a very good job at it, it seems, because it seems more years than not, I hear. Well, they kind of guessed wrong on the strain, which, I mean, I get it. They're guessing. No one has a crystal ball, but
– it's very challenging.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's why – influenza is its own deal, where like you hit the nail on the head with the next outbreak we have, or epidemic, if you watch the news, you know, for 4 dogs, will, you know, be a different strain. So I don't know. It's kind of maddening, but I give it what I have to.
Yeah. So do you carry the 2 strain?
Oh, now all I carry is the bivalent. Yeah.
Right.
That's because now that it's easy to get, I'm like, why would I carry anything else? You know, that way it's just, whatever, you're done.
So, little tangent here. I wanted to bring up our sponsor for this episode just very quickly before we continue our discussion. Same sponsor as last episode. Dr. Karen, would you enlighten us on ecosia.com?
Oh yeah. So, it's a search engine basically. So if you're going to do a search, instead of searching in one of the big search engines like, you know, Google or Yahoo or Bing or whatever else there is. There used to be one called Ask Jeeves. Do you remember that one?
Oh my God, yes. That makes me feel so old to have you bring that up.
I love Ask Jeeves. Anyway, or snap.com or Excite. Oh my gosh. God, I'm aging myself. Anyway, instead of going to any of those, if you search at ecosia.com, same results, and they will plant trees with the money they raise. So instead of just, you know, making a CEO richer, you're actually doing some good to the planet by them planting trees. And they've actually planted so far, I think you said 22 million trees.
Yeah, so it's at 21,788,679,
681. Oh, they're doing okay.
Keeps going up. So I'm at the site here. They plant a tree once every 1.7 seconds.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Do they have like armies of tree planters?
I would imagine they must, and I guess this occurs globally. They go where in the most tree needed areas, I suppose.
Yeah.
And they're just planting trees. Now, I have a little experience with I don't want to bring up the company, but using, you know, paid ad space where, you know, those ads kind of show up above the organic links. And you know, it's pay per click, right? And the company keeps revenue. Well, they're donating a significant portion of that ad revenue, you know, to planting trees. So I think it's a pretty cool thing. I would like to let everybody.
I think it's 80% of their revenue they donate to planting trees. 80%. It's a hefty chunk.
No, that's huge. That's fantastic. So ecosia.com, ecosia.com. I will post that link at our show page. That'll also show up on iTunes as well. Give them a visit, and if you're going to search somewhere, you need information on the web, why not do it while you're planting a tree, doing some good for the environment? So back to canine flu. Did you see any legit cases? You said it never reached you?
Nope.
Because I saw a few.
No, I've never diagnosed flu. None of my friends have diagnosed flu. It's all just, I mean, then you know. Everybody wants to feel popular and be like, oh, I had influenza suspect. Well, it was a dog with bad kennel cough. You know, I mean,
yeah. And it, you know, initially it looks the same. So I saw a few cases in the latest outbreak. And you know, what we were doing with these patients, we were seeing them out in the parking lot. We let them in the, any respiratory signs, you got your examination in the parking lot. And so the biggest difference that I found between canine influenza and kennel cough is a lot of sputum, you know, from the nose, just really boogery, snotty, sneezing that'll just fly and, like, you know, hit the wall. Really nasty cough. Of course, we hear that with kennel cough. And the dogs just look awful. I mean,
high fevers too.
High fevers. Yeah, like 104 plus, like the kind of fevers. I'm sure you're in New Jersey. You treated some Lyme disease cases with those giant fevers. In Long Island, I saw like 5 a month.
Oh, really? Because I only had one. Crazy.
Okay. Well, Long Island, it was like, no exaggeration, 5 a month. And so, you know, one of the hallmark signs of that was these gigantic fevers, 104, 105. So the flu does cause that. But just the dogs look so bad, and you're like, wow, you know, you think there's a very good chance this patient could die the way they look. Incidentally, though, in the end, and I think a part of it is getting awareness out, getting those patients in, instituting treatment appropriately. Florida actually did a very good job of shutting down the dog show circuit, the agility show circuit. FVMA, Florida Veterinary Medical Association, was very proactive in getting the word out to the veterinarians. So in very un-Florida-like fashion, because, you know, we're always a stupid state. They got it right. And so it enabled us to all prepare. And maybe that played a role. But realistically, in this last outbreak, we saw a 3% mortality rate. Now, of course, any dog dying from flu is tragic. You know, any single dog. But in the grand scheme of things, 97% of dogs are going to recover from it. You know, that's another reason for me. I don't necessarily throw up the panic alarm and feel like I need to vaccinate every dog under the sun for it. Until there's a legit outbreak within my state.
Well, and my friends in Chicago, when they had the flu outbreak there, the dogs that did die, they were not the 5-year-old bouncy, healthy dog that went to the boarding kennel, got flu and died.
Yeah.
You know, they were the 14-year-old lab who also had other stuff going on and it was dogs that had other problems too, which is kind of like in humans, the general flu population. And when I first wrote my Oh, I'll have to dig it up. I should have looked at it. But I wrote a dog flu article years ago when this first came out, and it was called Should We Panic About the Dog Flu? Because I'm in Illinois, and even though the outbreak was in Chicago, 5 hours north of us, you know, oh my God, it's flu, and people are, you know, prone to panic. So I got the statistics of how many humans die from influenza every year.
Yeah.
Oh, I forget what it was. It was like 30,000 or something.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even make the news. 30,000 right. people dying.
Yeah.
And then, like, I think seven dogs actually died of flu in Chicago at the time that I mean, more might have died since then. But at the time I was writing it, and I was like, guys, 30,000 versus seven, and which one's making the news? It just shows how the media loves to get people all riled up and panicked. And I'm like, and these 30,000 people, like, what was that? Nothing?
Yeah. 30,000. 30,000. It's yeah. unbelievable. And
older and probably had other things going on. You know what I mean? Just kind of like dogs, like we were saying, you know, it's not going to be the 40-year-old marathon runner usually, you know, that
yeah. I got a good news story tangent for you. Do you know in Africa, 60,000 children a year die from rabies? Rabies. 60,000
wow.
a year. Do you know how many people total have died from Ebola in the last decade?
Oh.
13,000.
Wow.
Okay. So Ebola makes all the news, right? We're all just right. terrified of Ebola. It's all we can talk about and think about. CDC's talking about it constantly, sending out resources, but there's 60,000 kids a year that die of rabies. And the reason I know that is because Merck is doing this big anti-rabies initiative
right.
where they're setting up all these places out in Africa and veterinarians on the ground to vaccinate these dogs that live in these villages. Nobody talks about that though. You know, it's like 60,000 and then 3% of cases of canine influenza. Oh my God, get them right. You know,
yeah.
I don't know. Everything's relative.
I had my old ladies calling me cause I'm a house call vet, like with these dogs who never leave the house and they want a flu shot cause they saw it on the news. I'm like,
yeah.
Your dog will honestly get struck by lightning before it gets the flu. Seriously, like
hey,
it never.
Is there an anti-lightning vaccine?
Yeah,
because I think they need one. Based on that statement, I think we need.
And if you say it's an epidemic, people will be like, "Oh my God!" So oh my gosh. So the take-home message is, if your kennel requires a flu vaccine, you know, play nice and whatevs. But dog flu is not something to panic over. There's many, many worse diseases out there that we should panic over, like heartworm or, you know, and that gets no media attention because it's so silent and boring and yeah. it's such a horrible disease and so easy to prevent. So, you know, it's, I just want to keep perspective. Like, as I'm sure you guys know, if you read my blog, that panic and mass hysteria is like my pet peeve. Like, I'm the person who the house is on fire. I'm like, oh, well, I was going to redecorate anyway, so I guess I'll get out of the house now. Because, you know, and I'm just not a panicker, but maybe that's why.
Yeah, and you know, that's a good trait for a doctor to not be a panicker. You know,
but it's kind of annoying, though, because, like, when I am in a clinic and, like, this crazy emergency comes in, I'm like, let's get a catheter. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, my God. I'm like, I'm going to shave now. And it's just, right. I don't know. Just
take a breath.
Like down almost. And I'm like, and now we're mellow. So.
Well, one of the things I learned about emergencies is that they're nothing like the show ER or anything
or
you
any
see
TV
on TV.
Or any TV show or movie you know, or anything.
Give me 3 threes of this stat. And all this stuff is happening. No, that's not how it goes. And I actually have friends that are ER doctors. It doesn't go that way in the human ER. It doesn't go that way in the animal ER. It's a much more calm scenario. You know, unless the patient codes, you know, they've got to resuscitate. A little bit different, but still, we're resuscitating. All right, get the tracheal tube in. Let's get an IV catheter in. Pumping the heart here.
No one's yelling.
Yeah. No one's in tears.
Well, if there's a newbie, like, you know, if there's a real rookie, you're like, just go stand over there. I don't know. Like, I'm like the opposite of getting worked up. It's funny. I get more worked up about somebody who, like, does something stupid like refuse to let me treat their dog's skin infection, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, that's like, no!
But, so, incidentally, since you are still in the great state of Illinois, what's the university's policy on the dog flu vaccine? Do you know what's their stance on it? Should it be a core? Should it not be?
I don't know. When I was at Illinois, we didn't even have what we called community practice, which is where we like just did vaccines and normal preventative care, because I guess that was budget cuts or something. So I don't even know if they even offer the flu vaccine or have even preventative care they offer there anymore. So.
Wow, they cut community practice, huh? That's sad. They had that when I was there. I left in 2002.
And you left just in time because they cut it right before I started my clinicals in 2003. And
so they raised tuition, doubled their class size, and had to cut something.
And then and we also had no neurologists. So whenever I'm bad at neurology, I'm like, hey, I didn't have a neurologist in vet school. Okay, work with me. So that's my mulligan.
I had a neurologist there.
And we had her for the lectures for the first, like, for, like, the second year or whatever it is, lectures. But then, like, then she left. And we never actually got, like, any rotations or clinical anything.
Yeah.
So we got the notes.
Probably not the worst thing, though. She was, let's just say, different. I'm not going to say names.
No, I know. No tears were shed.
yeah. So, yeah, another lovely tangent. But bottom line takeaway is no need to panic. Definitely consult your veterinarian. Pay attention. If your veterinarian is a high-volume vaccine clinic and that's how they make their money, you may want to take their opinion with a grain of salt because they're still dishing that stuff out like candy right now.
Uh-huh.
It's part of the, like, 30 vaccines they're giving these dogs that come in.
Those
dogs, like, must leave, like, feeling like a pincushion. And just like this antigenically stimulated hot body.
I can't imagine how crappy it has to feel. But I will say, because like my friends in Chicago where they got the flu really bad, they're vaccinating because like the dogs who are like going to doggy daycare all the time, go to dog parks all the time. That's kind of how the flu was spread. That's kind of how that whole problem started was doggy daycares and dog parks. So they're like, you know what? Yes, still vaccinate because what if it is lurking? What if it, you know, and. That I get because they've had it confirmed raging through their area and I get it. But like here where we've had zero confirmed cases, I'm like, guys, it doesn't just spawn out of the air. It has to come from somewhere. So, which we're fortunate actually, because we're not that far from Chicago that it didn't make it down here. So
by the way, while we're on that little tangent, do you know where it most commonly comes from?
Is it pigs or birds?
Well, the mutation occurs wherever it occurs, but it generally doesn't occur within this country. Dogs come in internationally to rescue groups, and specifically from South Korea.
Oh, I know China is really big. I learned something, and this was an undergrad, that something about China, how the way they raise pigs and ducks, pork and duck meat are both very big in China. Mm-hmm. And the pigs are below, like in these cages, and they have the ducks like on top of the cages somehow. It's like a puppy mill, but with pigs and ducks, I don't know.
Yeah.
And because the way influenza is made, the pig and the bird species are both like both destinations that the influenza virus loves.
Yeah.
And loves to mutate between birds and pigs. And so this setup in China is like the perfect influenza mutation breeding ground for all these weird strains. And that's like pig flu, bird flu. Well, have you heard of those? There's a reason.
Yeah.
No, it's not cow flu. Notice it's always pig flu and bird flu. Swine flu. Sorry.
Swine flu, correct.
Yes.
Yeah. But, and the same applies to people too, right? We have whatever strain that was, but we were all calling it swine flu, but that made people quite sick. I remember my son was a little baby. Every time he had a cold, he had to get swabbed for swine flu.
Oh, my God.
So, no, that's a good point. It's very interesting. I just didn't realize how many dogs we imported as rescue dogs from Asia. That was awakening for me. And that it's been responsible for influenza outbreaks. It blew my mind.
Well, and people traveling, too, in terms of the human, you know, I mean – people traveling on the road. But I know after the Korean Olympics, total tangent here, but excuse me, there was a movement because Korea, the rural parts still eat dog meat, and the way that they farm and butcher the dogs is nothing. It makes American butchers look like, you know, Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
So it's so bad. And so they're really trying to get a lot of rescues and shut down these dog meat farms where they, like, strangle them to death. And so I think the rescues and the imports need to happen, you know, and I would never want to say stop that. But it's life. I don't know.
Yeah, and then the Sochi Winter Olympics 4 years ago, I guess wherever Olympics go, all of the Americans that flock there, the athletes' families, all the sportscaster, all the, you know, supporting personnel, the TV crews, what have you, a bunch of them come back with all these dogs, you know, so it's actually, it's very common. So, yeah.
There's a movement to get 200 dogs from Pyeongchang to the U.S., rescued dog meat dogs.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that will be the next flu strain. It's around the corner. It's coming. But I'm going to bet you, how much you want to bet? $1, $5? I'm going to bet that it won't be one of these strains.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
And then we'll be up to the 3-strain flu vaccine.
Yes. And they'll just keep making more and more of them. And it's funny because when the H3N2 came out, that was the new one. Then they had the H3N8 on clearance because nobody was buying it. You know, so they had all this extra H3N8.
Yeah.
And then they're like, buy H3N2 and get an H3N8 free. Like, please take the stuff.
Yeah.
Soon H3N2 will be that one whenever the new one comes out, and I give up. So.
Yeah. And actually, that's what this latest outbreak, we actually pre-sold the vaccine. So we knew how much to buy on a weekly basis because I didn't want, like, the original H3N8. I was stuck with all of this vaccine, and ethically, I couldn't push it on people. I'm like, I'm not going to just push this unnecessarily because I got all this extra vaccine, right?
I had some to use up, but they were also – we don't have flu here.
Yeah.
And they were ones that just needed it for the boarding kennel, and the boarding kennel didn't care. I'm like, you know what? We don't have flu here anyway, so here, make the boarding kennel happy. I'll use up my H3N8, you know?
Right. That's good use for it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well – good topic. We always appreciate talking to you about this stuff. It's good that we agree about most things. Because, you know, there's going to be probably some vets that are going to listen to this and be very pissed at us. You know, some feel very strongly in the other direction, and it's I've heard it, you know. So, but it is.
You know, and like I said, I mean, I totally get kennels requiring it, and I totally vaccinate, though. You know, I mean, I get it. It just, there's... nothing's ever black and white, and I think everyone, especially the internet, wants to make it black and white. You do this or you don't. And the thing is, it's not that simple. It all depends on where you go. Do you travel to Chicago? Do you, you know what I mean? And and then decide. So, yeah, but panic not required. So, anyway.
Yes, we will leave on that note. Panic not required. Well, pleasant evening to everybody. Thank you again, as always, for listening.
Thanks.
How powerful is the Cox Network? So powerful that one day, the internet will let your doctor perform miracles from thousands of miles away.
Connecting to remote operating room.
Giving a whole new meaning to the term house call.
Operation complete.
The Cox Network. With gig speeds everywhere, it's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, bringing us closer. In Cox serviceable areas, speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms apply. Other restrictions may apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.